So, hello everyone, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And joining me here, round the table, this week's show at League Express Towers, we're joined by Mr. Matthew Shaw. Just can't get rid of him, everyone.
How many times do I have to not be on the show?
And Aaron Bauer's back, everyone.
Back by popular... The people of Halifax are thrilled. Back by popular demand.
It's not the week to have him on as well when it comes to Halifax, is it?
Can we talk about the Championship?
Well, let's get started. So, hello everyone, and welcome to the show. A preview for Super League Championship and League One, everyone. Yes, it's back, coming your way this week. Plus, we'll also be talking the community game, as we're going to be joined by Wigan St Jude's and Bentley. But before we discuss all those things about the future, let's talk about the past, and in particular, the World Club Challenge.
Great game.
Was a good game, was it? Very good spectacle as well.
Yeah, you know what? We're a bit old school, I felt, watching the game. I felt like I was watching Barry McDermott again, with swinging arms and everyone mouthing off at each other. Thought referee had a great game. He let the game flow, despite the fact that probably could have pulled up a few things. But that battle down the middle was awesome. Wormsley and Thompson against Weira Hargreaves in particular was just what rugby's all about for me. Bring it back.
I mean, everyone's, Aaron, talking about how good Sydney were and that kind of thing, but St Helens were pretty good, all things considered as well.
St Helens were brilliant. I thought they made it a real occasion. They could have, like Matt said, that battle up the middle early on set the tone, didn't it? Wormsley. Seemed like Warrior Hargreaves was trying to murder him every time they came into collision. And he just kept getting back up and running back at him. It was old school, like Matt says. I think Sydney deserve an immense amount of credit. I think the NRL dropped the ball when it comes to spreading the game a lot of the time, but there is always an exception to the rule, and the Roosters certainly fit into that category. Trent Robinson should be president of the International Rugby League Federation, the RFL, the NRL, everything. I think he just speaks so well. Some of the best promo stuff that came this week came from his mouth.
A lot of love for Trent this past week.
In a sport that is blighted by cynicism and pessimism...
Yeah, he's
Trent
great.
Robinson is a shining light of exactly what rugby league needs. He's not shy of being critical, but he's constructive when he does it. You know, saying the NRL and Super League need to get together, but not bashing them, doing it in a constructive way. And then just the way he genuinely talked up the game, it made Super League sound like it was $1 million with his comments, which is fantastic. And the sad reality is there will have been people who listened and seen his comments who scoff at what he says, but... The problem is that's the problem with rugby league. That's the attitude we've got. Trent Robinson is absolutely someone that this sport can learn from, but needs to put in a much more prominent, more vocal position. He should be spokesperson.
I think the NRL need to listen. If the NRL are serious about growing the World Club Challenge, and it is a two-way street, Super League need to play their part as well. But they do. You would argue the clubs and Super League certainly play their part over here. The NRL need to really get into Trent Robinson, use him as a sounding board. He's already come out with an idea about playing three games over here, one game in the NRL every 4 years as a sort of cycle. I think it's a sound idea. I'm sure you could improve on it further and have a bit more detailed discussion about it. But I honestly would be willing, if I was Todd Greenberg, to sit down with Trent Robinson and listen to what he's got to say about growing the game, because he's worked in France, he's worked in the NRL, obviously he's been involved with Super League, he's done most of what there is to do at the top level. This is a guy who you need to really pay attention to.
I apologise for a name drop here, but I was on Laurie Daly's show.
Who's Laurie Daly?
Well, he was asking who Martin Sadler was, I can assure you.
Martin's here, everyone, by the way. Yeah. Sorry to start early because I've got a train to catch.
I said a question for him was, what's the general attitude towards the World Club Challenge over there? So, because we always get the impression, don't they, they don't really take it seriously, they're not fans of it. And he said quite the opposite. He says that they want to see it as a much bigger spectacle than it is, and they think it should be a series.
I mean, there's this talk, isn't there, of four teams, the Challenge Cup winners plus another.
For sure. League leaders, Grand Final, whatever. And that's what they want, and they'd like to see games go to Australia. The problem is...
The problem is the timetable.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
can't expand it while we've got the elongated season that we have over here, unfortunately.
Because there's so many things we want to add to the calendar. People want a nine.
Back to my point last week.
People want a nine. People want a World Club Series. All these, but you've got to find somewhere to play them. Now, we need to take away 3 or 4 weeks from the calendar before we add all those things.
I would be willing to sacrifice a month of the season to get two extra rounds of a World Club Series in,
100%.
I think. What I did see as well is if, theoretically, if England were playing tomorrow There's no doubt that Johnny Lomax would be one of the halfbacks for me.
Stand off.
Thought he was absolutely fantastic. Some of the balls he was
as
throwing.
As good as anybody on the field.
I thought he was really, really good. He was one of several players that really didn't deserve to be on the losing side, but he's come of age so much in the last 18 months. So obviously we know he's had a lot of injuries. He started at full, or he went to fullback, played a lot of fullback. He won that grand final with Gaskell playing in the halves, didn't he? But he just looks like the real deal now. I would say he's probably the best halfback we've got in English rugby at this moment in time.
I think so.
Well, yeah. Well played, everyone. And like we said, a big congratulations to the Sydney Roosters as well on retaining that trophy. And hopefully we'll have another World Cup challenge to report on next season. Now, next up for St Helens will be Saturday's match away at Toronto. Long way to go. Warrington. just joking, everyone. But let's talk about the matches more generally for this weekend. Starting off on Thursday night, one game in town, Hull KR against Castleford. Let's talk about Hull KR first before we talk about Castleford.
Hull KR were not very good on Friday night.
The try they scored towards the end was good.
Do you know what? A lot's been made of the fact that they're lacking size down the middle, but it wasn't there where they were exposed for me. It was on the edges. There was no strike at all. I'm not sure what Harvey Levette is. He's got a skill set, but
he had a particularly disappointing game, didn't he?
I don't know what position he should play. I don't know.
Is he a 13?
I don't know what he is. I don't know. Kane Lynette, great defensive player. Is he gonna? Does he provide him a threat with the ball? Not really. Same with Sean Kenny
for 2 months, aren't they, as well now?
Parcell out for 2 months. Oh, gosh, they've got Mullen suspended this week. Garbutt's not going to be fit for the full season. If they get 15 games out of Garbutt, they've done well.
Yeah.
I think really, they had a promising start. I think what we've seen in the last 2 weeks has reinforced where they're at.
The only promising thing for Hull KR, in a sense, is I think this kid Matty Staughton has played very well for them.
Very well.
And Minchella, I mean, I've not seen all their games, but Minchella's played well as
Minchella
well.
Minchella played up,
and you know they need to
be for foreseeable.
Yeah, they need to develop those players, and you know but in the meantime, they need to probably buy some size for up front.
They need, but the problem is, Danny Maguire said in League Express this week, there's so many injuries in the NRL. The NRL
started.
Clubs don't want to let players move on because they need them. So where they're going to pick up, I mean, we've seen it, I think this will be out by this time, the podcast out, Toronto have signed Jack Wells and Ben Kilner from Wigan. Ben Kilner's never played for Wigan, but this is where they're at. This is where how depleted the game is in terms of forwards. Toronto are having to sign two kids, basically.
The flip side to that is, isn't it great that these kids are being given the
for
opportunity
sure.
that
yeah. Yeah,
maybe
sure.
two or three seasons ago they wouldn't have been able
for
to
sure.
have.
But, yeah. But for Hull KR, to bring it back to them,
they need more than that.
They need more than a kid. Yeah. They've lost Wella Haraki, experienced leader, Mossy Masoi, experienced campaigner, and big players, Mitch Garber, experienced player. They need someone of that ilk, not kids.
Now, no Alex on the show this week, so I'm going to have to come to you first. Castleford, Aaron. Castleford last week, they dug it out, didn't they?
Yeah, they were ordinary at best in the first half, weren't they? Having said that, I thought Wakefield played well, but then they fell apart.
Yeah, Wakefield did play well in the first
they
half.
Fell apart. Disagree,
give them a bit of credit.
I thought that first 40 minutes...
Was this your show or is this my segment?
I thought the first 40 minutes were the worst 40 minutes I've seen all season by distance.
It was an ordinary game, I agree with that. But Castleford looked good. More importantly than the results, they just look like they're in a good place as a squad because they're getting players back at the right time. I think Senny Lefeo was in the 21 last week. He'll probably play this week. I think he's Milner back this week.
I think he's supposed to be.
Foster's not far away. Fecky's not far away. For a team who's struggled with injuries over the last couple of years, all of a sudden they're looking pretty good. Now, it's very, very early days. But some of the problems that you were pointing at Castleford in pre-season and asking whether they would be able to sort, like, who is their fullback? That already looks like it's been answered because Jordan Rankin looks
good
very
player.
Good.
Good player in my view.
He looks like he's fit in there. He looks like he belongs at fullback. Peter Matautia, he's great at centre. Then that left an issue over Chase Blair. Well, he's playing in the back row and he looks fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think Castleford are in a pretty good spot.
But Darryl Powell's done the old thing as well of what Darryl Powell does, and that is sign players who seem to play much better than you might have expected. He spots something in play. I'm thinking of Darryl Olfert's.
Yeah, Olfert's
looks
good.
Strong on the wing to me.
He's been good.
You know, and
shame for Clare, because Clare is the obvious one who misses out now because of how well Olfert's is playing when Fecky comes back.
But he's not a bad guy to have in reserve.
No, he really isn't. You know, McShane looks like he's ticking again. The halfback pairing speaks for itself.
Ollie Holmes, I thought, played fairly well
as
well.
He's a good player. If if they stay fit, if that half-back pairing stay fit, Castleford make the five for me. Griffin has come in and done a good job. So, yeah, like Martin says, I think midway through last year, why are Castleford signing George Griffin? But he looks decent. Why are they signing Oldford's a kid who can't get in the Salford
team?
You
look at Salford and you can see why they're missing him.
Yeah.
Missing Griffin.
You know, it's a long marathon of a season, but a month in, Castleford look pretty healthy, pretty tidy, and I'd probably expect them with OKR's problems to go and win tomorrow night at OKR, you would think.
And then that's four wins out
that's
of
four
five.
Wins from five. Yeah. Then, you know,
that's a hell of a start, isn't it?
That's Thursday night's game. What about Friday night's game? Also on telly. Yeah, yeah. Uncharted territory this season. It's one game on a Friday night. Sky Sports' viewing figures should be up for this one. Leeds against Warrington.
Can I ask? I don't know if there's an actual answer to this. Why is there always loads of games on Friday night?
Because of short turnarounds, probably. This is how Super League this weekend should be scheduled, ideally every week. One Thursday, one Friday, one Saturday. Three Sunday.
Absolutely. Agree. It'll be interesting to see the Sky viewing figures for Friday night's game.
It will, because it's a good game as well. It's a good two big teams.
It's traditionally a game that you would expect to draw viewers, wouldn't it? And fans, of course.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I think it's got the makings of a good game.
Shall we talk firstly about Warrington? I feel like we've got a new segment on the show. Widdup, how did he do?
He scored a try from a horrendously forward pass.
There we go. Right.
He did all right.
There we go.
He scored.
Join us next week for another update.
But again, the guy who really looked great for me when he scored a try was Matty Ashton.
Yeah.
You know, he was back in the side, back at full back. Obviously, he'd been left out the previous game, which they lost. So he's back in the side and did a great job.
But now injured.
Yeah, well,
hamstring injury.
Really
sad.
Big shame.
Leeds, obviously they go into this game with a win against Salford last week. We'll come to the Salford side of that later. But
just ticking along under the radar at the minute, Leeds.
It's a much better start than last year, though,
isn't it? Of course it is. They were
whether in the top five, only played three games.
They were poor on the opening weekend against Hull. They were poor, but since then, they've won a couple of games. They've got their own problems. You know, they've got a little bit of an interesting dynamic going on in the halves and the hooker with Myler coming in and sort of doing a bit of hooker and stuff like that. So they're going along under the radar, but having lost to Hull on the opening weekend, this is a bit of an acid test for Leeds and a bit of a benchmark for them. We'll see where they are this week with no disrespect to
Salford. I think it's an acid test for both sides,
What do you think's the thinking behind the Greenwood signing?
I think it's a good signing, actually. I think.
Is he going to play prop, though?
No, Richard Agar's talking about him potentially playing in the middle because they are a little bit light there, aren't they?
Well, he said all along they want some size.
And he is big.
Unless
he's alluding to the fact they want more size on the edges.
Well, going back to what we've said about the NRL, and Leeds are in that market too. There's not really anyone out there, so Greenwood probably...
It's going to be a month, isn't it?
It's a short-term deal.
It's a two-month deal.
It's going to be a month. Anyone who knows the mechanics of the market, it's going to be probably a month before anything falls off the tree in the NRL because the season hasn't started yet. Players are waiting for an opportunity, and if it gets to a month in and they haven't had one, that's when they start to get a little bit twitchy and get some cold feet. Mm. So it's going to be a while before anyone can do any business over there, I suspect. Leeds are being linked, obviously, as we know, with Field. But I don't think it will happen now. Has he got a bit of a run at Parramatta? Did he get a run at Parramatta?
He's got a trial, but Agar says in the Express this week, when they get that quarter spot, they'll be using a middle, not a
utility. Not Field. Yeah.
Field's a lot. Field in 2021, I 100% can see. I think Kevin Sinfield's done some
I agree
good
with that.
Business in
I agree
field.
With that. He was a very easy target last year. Very easy target. But
if you look at what they've done.
Sayo Manafanai.
Good signing.
Yeah. They made the Newman call. Gale was a gamble.
And it's too early to say on Gale yet.
Looks like it's paying off.
Yeah, you know,
Newman,
so far.
The Watkins one, that was a massive call to me.
Yeah, it was.
And everyone was like, why on earth would they do that?
Why are we chucking a teenager instead of one of his best players?
And now you think, what a genius call that was.
All that said, Warrington are travelling to Headingley on Friday night. What do you think?
It's tough. You know, they both got an identical record, albeit Leeds have played a game less. I think they're two of probably quite a few teams that we just don't quite know the full story about yet. You know, both have shown glimpses of promise. After the opening fortnight, we were talking about Warrington having won one, lost one, as being potentially one of the best teams in terms of starting the season. Mm. They've won one and lost. They've won another one and lost another one since then, and now we're not quite so sure. They made heavy weather against Toronto.
Some people said they were lucky to beat Toronto.
They made heavy weather of it, didn't they? They were obviously cruising. I saw an interview with Widdup who pretty much said, you know, they were cruising and maybe they took the foot off the gas a little bit or something along those lines, he said. But I don't quite know about Warrington yet, and I think it's fine not to know. And I'm looking at the table now.
Have we used the phrase "it's early days" yet? We have, haven't we?
But Ben, I think
hashtag
and I think everyone
days.
Around the table will agree. You can't get a full gauge on any team to leave.
Huddersfield have won 3 out of 3. You don't quite know. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Probably game of the weekend in terms of the table on Sunday. You'll know a bit more about Huddersfield after this weekend,
well, this
won't
is
you?
The thing. We can get, hypothetically, Huddersfield get pumped by 20 and you're like, oh yeah, bubbles burst. That's the natural reaction. It's too early to say on any team.
Yeah. Easter.
Where they're at. Easter's the time you can properly judge it.
Let's move on to Saturday's match, Toronto against St Helens. Interesting one, this one, to see how St Helens bounce back from last week. But also Toronto as well, because there's sign of life there, isn't there?
They are, but
they've had some really tough fixtures, really.
I feel like they may take a step away from getting close to having this week.
Well, you never know.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how much Saturday the World Club took out of St Helens. Yeah. They put a hell of a lot into it. You could see that much. They gave it a real dig. They were equals to the Roosters in most areas of the field for 80 minutes, actually. They never really fell away. So mentally and physically, that will have probably taken a big toll on them. They've had a week to get it out of the system, which is good. Toronto are getting... They do look like they're getting closer to a win. However, they need one. They need one soon. Just to get that first one. Chris Chester spoke about it, I think, after they lost their first game, and he said... We just need one early doors just to get that first win, get it off us backs. I don't think anyone at Wakefield would be worried about one win from three, but Toronto just need to get that win.
I think the fact that there's a few other clubs that have only got one win takes the pressure off a little bit.
A couple of matters arising, obviously, as the show was going to air last week, the news broke about Brian Noble departing. What do we make of that?
Surprise?
Well, Noble was on the Super League show this week, wasn't he? Saying, you know, that it's a very friendly, amicable breakup. And, you know, he's going to look for other opportunities. But when you bear in mind the problems they've had with the salary cap and the problems they've had with Chase Stanley getting him here, and you bear in mind that Brian's been the director of rugby in that period, I think you've got your answer there as to why he's left, haven't you, really? It's not... you know, it looks as though they've not planned in terms of the salary cap very effectively for their debut in Super League.
And this is purely with no intel. This is just from the outside, my view on it. I also thought it was interesting that his departure was announced a few hours after Championship and League One clubs had been informed Ottawa were coming into the competition. So I'm assured that Noble is not going to Ottawa.
No.
So maybe just me reading between.
Just still you with no intel.
Pardon?
Is this still you with no intel?
I'd suggest, though, logistically, with all the challenges that a transatlantic team faces, that someone like Brian Noble wouldn't necessarily be a bad appointment.
It could be a very good appointment from Ottawa.
He's done it already.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be interesting to see whether they replace him in terms of a like-for-like figurehead, because Bob Hunter, by his own admission, isn't particularly au fait with the workings of British Rugby League,
nor should he be. You wouldn't expect him to be.
Yeah, that would then leave potentially someone like Martin Vickers or Brian McDermott, who
a director of rugby.
I don't know. You would have to ask Brian McDermott that. But it's just interesting to note whether the guy who has been in charge of their cap and their recruitment is going to be replaced. If he isn't, that creates a little bit of an interesting subplot. If it's going to be
Got to be in charge of that, haven't they?
Well, it's either going to be McDermott or a new entity coming into the club, isn't it?
The thing is, if you hand all that responsibility to McDermott, it's a massive distraction from actually coaching the side. There's a lot. You can't underestimate it. The regulations now, for example, for salary cap, are really complex and take a lot of getting your head around.
Need a spreadsheet.
Someone isn't happy. I think we can all assume someone at Toronto, whoever that may be, isn't quite completely satisfied with the state of the cap there.
No.
Just another thing this is a Saturday game, which you'd think, because it's an evening game as well. Is it an evening game?
Yeah, it is 6 o'clock,
Wouldn't it be good if it was filmed and taken back to Canada? Because there's a lot of Canadian supporters who've been saying, we're not really seeing
them at the moment. Saturday afternoon, it's a good time slot, isn't it?
I'm sure someone's looking at that anyway. Yeah. Not necessarily for this weekend. But that game on Saturday is not on telly, so you'll have to watch it on the Super League show or something. Anyway, Sunday. Let's talk about Sunday's matches. First up, Hull FC against Catalans. Catalans back in action. Hull FC coming back after that defeat at Wigan?
The Catalans looked really strong, I thought.
Big problem though, Martin, they're not playing in France this week.
No, well, that's always been a problem for them.
They've been at the five.
Yeah, but they've...
I think they'll win this game, actually.
I don't think they've got a bad record playing in Hull, actually, to be honest, and it's certainly going to be an interesting game for them. Of course, they've only played two, haven't they, so far? Yeah.
Which I think works in the favour, actually. I think once you're four games...
I don't know.
I think once you're four games in, the mental, physical fatigue starts...
I don't think you want to be having 2 week gaps between games. I don't think you want to be having 2 week gaps between games so early in the season either.
No, probably not.
Now, not to carry on the theme of last week when we were talking about Hull, but it's still a bit inconsistent, isn't it? I know it's four games in.
The issue is, and this is what Lee Radford said after the Saints game, they didn't handle adversity well. And something very similar happened against Wigan in that last quarter.
Yeah.
Going got tough and Hull cracked.
They didn't, yeah. Again, you'd be hesitant to make too much of a sweeping prediction about one team 4 weeks in, but the nature of the two losses they've had suggests that there's something there that needs to be fixed pretty sharpish. And I would suggest, looking at that Catalans team, what they've got, they'll face a similar test this week than they have in those last two games. So there's going to be a bit of pressure on Hull this week, actually, because you look at Warrington, who've got the same record. They've gone win-loss, win-loss. So that doesn't really put too much pressure on a team. But when you start quite well, win two, and then you lose two,
yeah.
I think there's a need to probably get back on the horse quite quickly.
They, to be fair to them, didn't have Tuomavaave, who's been a big player for them.
They didn't have Satai or Manumau, did they?
They didn't, and they didn't have...
Now Largo.
That's four big players.
We've not seen their squad yet for this Sunday's game.
No, there's four big players missing. Mm. So let's not get too carried away. I think the big question at Hull is Jake Connor. Because Jake Connor's not performing. You know, how long do you keep a player like Albert Kelly out if one of your halfbacks isn't performing?
Well, if Tuomavaave is still out, Connor goes to centre.
Yeah, that's the obvious thing.
You know,
I'm really.
But again, is that a help or a hindrance to have players that can move around so much?
I don't want to give up on Connor because I've been a big defender of him moving to the halves for years.
I think he'll come good in the halves. I think he needs a bit of time. He spent 2 or 3 years. Being moved from pillar to post, playing in various positions, which can't be easy, you know, just for the sheer nature of training every day, not knowing where you're lining up and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think he deserves a run.
Let's talk about the other game then on Sunday, Salford against Wakefield. Where should we start? Should we start off with Ian Watson? Because, you know, we had a big discussion last year about St Helens and comments about referees. I mean,
has anything happened to Ian Watson after that outburst?
The RFL have said that they're going to be responding.
Right.
They're going to be writing. Well,
he's asked for a response, hasn't he?
If Ian Watson's claims are true and he's contacted Steve Ganson and he hasn't heard back from him, then the answers are needed from Steve Ganson because it's his job and he should be in contact with the coaches regularly. I think there was some talk that Ganson may have been on holiday.
Because he's there to... we've said, you know, if you're a head coach and you're frustrated, that is the right channel to go down, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And if he's not getting back to them, and if he has been on holiday, then someone should have been covering for him. So, you know, if Ian's claims are true, then that is poor.
Chris Chester pulled no punches, did he, at the end of the game against Cass, but... that first half was good.
But they fell apart. I don't know. The thing that always made me think Wakefield would probably be all right this season is the fact that they've got quite a big squad and they are going to need it over the course of the season. As it's turned out, they're going to need it after four games.
Well, as I say, Hampshire's going to be...
They had a reserve game on Sunday at Widnes and there were a lot of big players in there. Alex Walker played. I think Atkins played. They've got a lot of players to call on. Whether those players are going to be good enough to serve them, I don't know.
You just said it. They've got a big squad to cover them for the season. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's 4 weeks in.
It's 4 weeks in and they're already having to rely on it. Did I not say on the first show, I said injuries every year.
Someone breaking the jaw isn't...
I know. That's unfortunate. That's
right,
rugby.
Okay.
I take that into account. But the problem is, it seemed to me that Wakefield signed a bigger squad to cover injuries. What the question should have been was,
why are we getting so many injuries?
I don't think that by just signing a much bigger squad was the correct answer for Wakefield. What needed, and like you say, a broken jaw, you can't help that.
Can't legislate for a broken
jaw. But ankles and hammies, and you can't.
Well,
it's not bad luck.
No.
Just before we move on from Wakefield, we do have to talk about Tom Johnson's try in the corner.
Phenomenal.
Try of the week.
It's not really done the rounds, like...
Fuming about that, I am.
Why?
We get right. Well, whenever there's a worldy goal, whenever there's a worldy goal, football, or someone bashes sixes in cricket, all over, everywhere, absolutely everywhere. Wow. Tom Johnston scores. I mean, it's like a cheat code.
Because football's not as big as
but we didn't try.
Sport,
the spot hasn't tried, Aaron. The spot hasn't tried.
Two viral videos which I shared around, both involving balls. In last month, the guy's intro to Insomnia.
Oh, yeah.
Right, they're two great videos, right? But I know nothing about.
So whose
balls.
Responsibility is it to make something go viral? Well,
this is my question.
Because you can't force people to share something. Super League did their. Did Super League not clip it and send it out?
Did they?
Yeah.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure they did.
How often do they post it?
I don't know. Once or twice. How often should they be posting it?
More.
Can't be ramming it down someone's throat.
You send it
grow organically.
Nah, you send it to Sports Bible. You send it to all these things that make things viral.
Oh, and having learnt our lesson from World Rugby, you watermark it as well, the video, just to make we know which code we're talking about.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, I was going to say the Reece Williams try went viral, didn't it? With millions of people looking at it.
No one knows it was Super League.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't watermarked. Anyway.
Well, I'd be more savvy. More savvy than that.
Finally, for Sunday, there's a reason why I've done it in this order. It'll all become clear in a second as we will be hearing from Wigan St Jude's. Huddersfield v Wigan. Yeah. Setting up a segue in advance here, Aaron.
Good.
Huddersfield, first time they've won the first three games since 2013.
Is that the year they won the League Leaders Shield?
Yeah. Number one versus number two, isn't it? It's a massive game. And I think it's going to be the real acid test for Huddersfield. I think Wigan, by the way, really great to see Dom Manfredi back, scoring a try at the weekend. I think he's got the potential to be an England winger.
Yeah, he's the best winger they've got.
In this against Australia in the World Cup next year. And Bevan French playing brilliantly as well. So it's going to be a tough one for Huddersfield, this. They've won three away games, but this is by far the hardest test they've faced.
Hashtag, Aaron, it is early days.
Yeah.
But if Huddersfield win this game,
then they will have four wins from four and nothing more.
Okay.
But I like Wolford. I've said it before. I think Huddersfield needed to allow a coach time to build his squad. They went through a period of changing coaches too often after Paul Anderson. And I think they are probably starting to slowly get the rewards that they deserve for sticking with Wolford, because he's a very, very talented coach. He's a great guy as well. He's been great to deal with in the media. And he's starting to build a squad that looks like his at last. There were too many players, even as recent as last season, that you just knew he didn't want, and players that you knew he didn't fancy. He's been given not only the time and the money, but he's been given the trust to build that squad. My own prediction that they would struggle to finish and maybe finish in the bottom four is probably looking a little bit foolish at this moment in time. I'm big enough to admit that, Matt.
Well, they started at 66-1, and now they're 28-1, aren't they?
How many shows do I have to? Can I ask the question? Are they this season Salford?
I was just going to say, there's always a bolter, isn't there? Was it Wakefield a couple of years ago that finished fifth, albeit when it was a top four? Salford last season. There's always someone who you don't expect. There's always someone that underperforms and someone that overperforms. At this moment in time, there's a lot of evidence to suggest Huddersfield could
I think
be
if
that
Huddersfield
team.
Did win this game on Sunday, it would be a massive boost for their confidence, and I think it would seal them as a potential.
The other thing I like about Huddersfield, the other thing I like about Huddersfield a lot, and I made a point last year, I think at one game, I think they played Salford. A lot of kids, a lot of homegrown kids. All right, they've signed your likes of the prop from Bradford, Wilson, and Joe Wardle. But Joe Wardle start Huddersfield? No, he started at Bradford, didn't he? But Jake Wardle, the senior twins, Matty English, Darnell McIntosh. You could go on and on. I'm sure I've missed some. Apologies if I've. Obviously, McGilvery. There's homegrown players there. There's a future there as well. Now, if Wolford was to stay long-term, you get the feeling this might not just be a one-season thing, because there is the potential for those players to get better. Caesar's young. Gaskell, they've got a coach they can trust. I like him. I think I go on about him a lot. I think he speaks well. I think he comes across well. Players I know that have played under him and against him speak very highly of him. He's a good coach, and good on Huddersfield for... Well, not good on Huddersfield, because he's only been here 5 minutes in rugby league terms. They've made the right decision sticking with him.
Just to cover off Wigan, who are visiting Huddersfield this weekend, they're just being Wigan, aren't they, at the moment? They're
just getting the job done.
Yeah.
Although they were apparently good against Hull.
They're a good team, though, aren't they? I mean,
no, but they've been all right, but they'd only been all right, haven't they, in the first couple of rounds?
Wigan look like a team that are getting it done early doors, and I get the feeling, it's only a hunch, and based on my rugby league knowledge, I'd probably be wrong, but get the feeling when it comes to summer and it's warm and it's dry, you think Bevan French is good. You think Hastings is playing well now. Yeah. Hardacre, second season, he's back in now. He's had that year to get under his belt.
I think Wigan are looking really strong challenges to some
They again, no disrespect to Huddersfield and Castleford, who are in the top three. Wigan and Saints, you'd have to guess, would be the best two over the course of 29 rounds. I just think if Manfredi can get fit as well and it gets to summer, they're going to be some team. They'll be good to watch, which you haven't been able to say about Wigan for a few years as well.
They were good to watch end of last year.
But the Ian Lennigan's admitted...
I think with Bevan French there, they've got to be good to watch, haven't they?
Yeah, Ian Lennigan's admitted that while it's obviously the paramount to win games, there has to be a need to get people excited to put bums back on seats at Wigan. Yeah. And I think they will, come the summer, they're going to be some team to watch.
Well, that's round five of Super League, all happening this weekend. And speaking of Wigan, everyone, Wigan St Jude's received some very positive attention this past week from Sport England. Nice little video on their Club Matters website. And for more on this, I caught up with chairman of the junior section at Wigan St Jude's. Here's John Davenport.
It was a quick turnaround, really. We got a call just before Christmas asking us to do it. So it was quite a job to pull because we have 20 junior teams and then we've got the community and everything. It was quite a job to pull everybody in, but we sort of did it in the first 2 weeks and then got it all set up. And it went quite well. It was a bit hectic at the time, but it went quite well. And I'm very pleased with the actual result. You know, the video itself's great.
Wigan St Jude's a fabulous community club, but it really does showcase what a club like Wigan St Jude's does for its community.
Yeah, I mean, we are pushing to be a bigger community club because the days of the old-fashioned rugby league club, it's dead on its feet, really. We try and use the clubhouse as a sort of centrepiece for the area. So we've got kids in from four upwards doing the sort of cubs and the rugger rascals. We've got a netball team. We have two football pitches at the top. They come back to the club. So we have a Wigan St Jude's football team. We have a Darts and Dominoes team. You know, so we're sort of pushing for everybody to sort of come in and use the club. I think the next thing we're going to try and do is sort of seal the bar area off them. We can start using the club in the day as well instead of just the outside. You know, start to get the sort of pensioners and people, you know, back involved and things like that to use the club in the day. So,
I mean, if you go to the Twitter feed at St Jude's Official, I mean, the video's on there as well. But we know about the, you know, what Wigan St Jude's does for rugby league more generally, all the kids that the club develops and that kind of thing. But from a rugby league perspective, it basically it's bringing more kids in, isn't it? Essentially through different avenues.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of teams, so where we would probably have like 107s, 108s, 109s, we've got like two at all the lower age groups because Catherine, who we sort of put in place at the Rugger Rascals, she's great at, you know, bringing those kids through and then into the newbies, which is the sort of new under sevens, and then working through. So we're really strong at the bottom and it's paying dividends now all the way through the junior section where we've got two teams at each age group. It's hard on a Sunday because I have to sort of plan pitches for, you can have 10 and 12 teams at home.
That's the thing, isn't it? And it's all volunteer driven.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't have any paid staff at all. Everybody is a volunteer at St Jude. So, I mean, we've got a committee meeting tonight and on the agenda it's, let's try and get this, let's try and get that, let's try and get this. There's no sort of negativity on the committee meeting. It's always, the club motto's going forward and we're trying to lift to that. You know, let's see what we can do to make it better. The assault course was an ideal scenario for that. We brought a strength and conditioning coach in. It just attracts other people because we've got so many and we just want to get better and better and better, and that's the way we go. We're just going forward and trying not to be negative. You know, if you put in for a grant and you don't get it, move on, try the next thing. But you know, so we're always moving. We've got a sort of split committee with some middle aged, quite a few retired people on it, but you know, they sort of do the stuff, the day to day stuff and going down the club and the bar and things like that, and we sort of do the sort of more high level stuff. So it's quite enjoyable. We've got a good team.
What's the future hold then for Wigan St Jude's? I mean, you touched upon the bar facilities and that kind of thing.
I mean, what I'd like to do is I'd like to get the club, because we've got a big club, and I'd like to use that to have things like conferences in the day, because we've got the the sort of the assault course now, Outward Bound, things where companies can come in and they can have like a session in the club, then they can go out and do a bit of stuff on the field and use the assault course and then come back in and, you know, sort of team building things for companies. We've got a lot of facilities, but we only use them at certain times. So instead of leaving them lying dormant, we're trying to sort of run it as a business, build ourselves up and then invest again into the rugby. So whatever we can make as a business, we sort of invest. We've just done all the function room up and, you know, we've redone everything, got full disabled access all the way around. So we're always moving forward. We're looking at, I think the next move for us will probably be a disabled rugby team. But there's nothing, everybody who's approached us, we've tried. You know, we don't turn anybody away.
John Davenport there, chairman of the junior section at Wigan St Jude's, at St Jude's Official. And cracking stuff there going on. I mean, Wigan St Jude's are in the spotlight there, Martin, but the community game, there's lots of clubs all doing some cracking work.
Yeah, and quite a lot of them getting a lot of help now from the World Cup people, you know, with that enormous £10 million fund for improving facilities. And, you know, they regularly announce grant aid, don't they? You know, ranging from fairly minor items of expenditure, like a lawnmower or something, up to, you know, rebuilding a clubhouse, which is great to see. I mean, we all know how a lot of junior clubs, you know, in rugby league have lacked the sort of facilities that the norm for rugby union, and it's just great to see them improving, I think. But Wigan, I mean, Wigan is just the ultimate heartland of rugby league in terms of the community game. You know, it still produces more players than any other town in this country. They're spread all over the game, and it you know, long may that continue.
Speaking of that World Cup 2021 grant process, we'll be hearing from Bentley at the end of the show, who've received £14,000, which is going to help their junior game.
World Cup.
Yes, very good.
Legacy, yeah. Proper legacy.
So we'll hear from Bentley shortly. Just before we get to that side of things and any other business, a lot to talk about in any other business, and where we've only got a few minutes left, actually, because we've spoke so long about Super League. Let's talk about the Championship and League One. Some matches this weekend. Batley taking on Sheffield, Halifax hosting the York City Knights, London hosting Featherstone. We've also got Oldham against Bradford and Whitehaven against Toulouse Olympique. Welcome to Cumbria, Toulouse.
Yeah.
They did play Barrow last season, in all fairness. Two matches on our league, Dewsbury against Widnes, Swinton against Lee.
Actually, the Championship, four undefeated clubs, Lee, Toulouse, London and Featherstone.
Which is and not I think really a surprise,
will,
is it?
I think they will be the top four at the end of the year.
The surprise at the minute. In fact, I think if you were to say the five would finish as it is as well, with Widnes in fifth, I don't think you'd be too surprised.
No.
The surprise is York. So far, although they have only played two games.
One of them was in Toulouse.
I actually thought they were very good against London in the Challenge Cup.
They're going to be
Sunday.
On television, aren't they?
Yes, they are, which is great news.
When's the date
March
of that game? March the 22nd.
That's great. That's against, great stuff from Sky, though, isn't it? That
it's against Featherstone.
Let's be honest. It's only being shown because it's a doubleheader.
Yes.
And you know, approach. And
hopefully, it's at the new stadium.
But still, they didn't have to do it.
No, they didn't. And it's the first, excluding Toronto, who paid for their games to be shown on Sky. It's the first regular league championship fixture on Sky since 2011.
And just to add as well, Sky have announced they'll be covering the Summer Bash as well this year. So.
Yeah, which is good news.
Yeah, absolutely. League One, what? League One starts this weekend,
everyone. Does it actually
start? Is it actually going to start this
weekend? Coventry hosting Newcastle, Doncaster hosting Barrow, the Scholars hosting North Wales, West Wales hosting Hunslet, and Workington Town hosting Keighley.
So who's got our first game for Hunslet?
Who's got a bye week? Let them play Ottawa.
Rochdale.
Let them play Valencia.
Or Valencia, yeah.
I mean, it's early days in League One. We're not really going to call it. But, you know, we've had the Challenge Cup last weekend where, you know, some League One sides gave some good performances.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking at Barrow's trip to Featherstone Rovers at the weekend. I mean, that was...
They've had 12 men for half a game, didn't they? But
they did, but they put out a strong team.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Doncaster Barrow looks a good game. Looks like the game of the weekend.
Donny won, didn't they?
No, got beat by... Workington. I mean, Workington are looking good this season as well, aren't they? And North Wales Crusaders, I know they got beat by Hunslet, but it was only
again,
just...
Again, Workington, I mean, you know, Thorman's first off-season, isn't it?
I hope he does well.
So do I hope he really does well.
Because he's a...
And I hope Newcastle do well because...
Yeah, you'd think they'd be the favourites, wouldn't you?
You're almost waiting for Newcastle to get out of that league now, aren't you?
The sport would be better off with Newcastle up.
The Championship would be stronger if Newcastle were in there.
Yeah, agreed.
That takes me on to my main point this week about Championship and League One. It's been reported that there's discussions going on about a possible restructure and that side of things.
Where would we be without a discussion about restructuring?
We won't be filling this bit of the show.
Look. There's no saying they're going to change it.
No, I said it's
why
discussion.
Why are you a part of that?
Because they talked about it. They've started talks, and the talks are purely there for them to decide early and to discuss early where they think the Championship is best off being in terms of number of games, number of teams.
Looking ahead to the new TV contract.
Blah, blah, all these sort of things. And it's a lesson learned from yesteryear. The driver of the conversation is now, in February, over 2 years before
I missed the video you two outside the Cot Farn in Salford. I miss all that.
There's going to be... I think Matt's right that it's good that they are getting the ducks in a row now, because Championship and League One are going to lose some money. Super League have already made it clear that the first X percent, is it 20% or 25% drop off of funding comes out of the Championship slice rather than Super League slice. It's wise that they're doing this now. I just can't shake this feeling that I've had for quite some time that we're heading back towards a two division sport. I think that might be where we have to go as a sport.
Do we decide now what League One's for?
Well, the problem you've got, Ben, is that if Championship and League One lose a significant... When we're talking millions, what have we got? 14? Is it 14 and 11? It'd be 26 teams next year with Ottawa. Where's the funding coming from for 26 teams if Super League are pulling their contribution?
Well, they've got to try and sell that competition, haven't they?
You basically are either saying, go and get the rights, which... It's going to be really hard.
But just to throw this out there, there's teams who are suggesting, you know, they want to join League One who aren't necessarily asking for funding.
No.
Yeah, but you still... So even Ottawa coming in, I don't know what agreement they've come to with central funding, because that was
I was told they want some.
If the negotiations with Sky are being led by Super League, then Super League don't have any rights over the Championship and League One competitions.
I think Super League would quite happily let Championship and League One go out to sea on its own and get its own rights.
You've got to be realistic.
Good that they're having these talks now.
This is why it's good that they're talking about this now. And coming up with a strategy in case the worst happens.
But there are going to be a lot of clubs after 2021 who right now rely on that funding that are going to have to become self-sustainable, and that is going to be difficult.
Listen, but that's from 2022. They can plan ahead.
Yeah.
It has been talked about for a few years now. This.
You then have a wider debate, though, that as well, you know, and this is all hypotheticals, that if they were, let's say they got 2.5 million for the rather than the 10, that then means Championship and League One clubs are spending less on players. That probably means two things. There's probably fewer players in the professional game at that level. It also means that the team getting promoted to Super League is going to be miles away from competing in Super League when they do get promoted, which brings a yo-yo system in.
Or, just to throw this out there, you try and do what Rochdale are looking towards, which is being a bit of a pathway from the community game.
Yeah, if that's what you're happy doing, then fair enough. But I would not.
We talked about Matty Ashton earlier.
Yeah, I get that, and that's great. All I could say is, from a supporter point of view, would you be completely comfortable? And I'm not saying Rochdale are this, and they aren't, because Andy Mays is a great operator. But it does feel like there are some clubs in Championship and League One that don't really have any desire to go all the way.
There is a food chain.
But it looks like
there's a food chain in every sport.
It looks like in 2022 there's going to be less food to feed the chain.
I still wouldn't give up too much hope on this. I think everyone's preparing for the worst, which, pessimistic, yes, but sensible also, yes. I don't think that broadcast deal, and I'm happy to be... Well, no, I'm not. I'd be gutted if I'm wrong. I don't think that broadcast deal is going to be as bad as people think it's going to be.
Mm. Well, I hope you're right.
So do
I hope it's...
To be fair to the sports broadcasters at the minute, they too are competing with online streaming services. And they need a summer schedule.
What's interesting, what could have a large say in it is the Premier League.
Let's just talk about some other matters around that Championship League One area as well that's arisen this past week. Firstly, the New York entering the Challenge Cup business.
Looks like it's going to happen.
It's
why
an interesting
not, why
idea.
Not League One, though?
Because I think the initial plan was always Ottawa this year, New York next year, wasn't it?
When
it was first
floated, to bring two in at once would be too much.
I don't know if it would be.
Yeah,
I don't know if it would be.
Well,
but Ottawa were always slated to come in this year when it first got mooted, because we were talking about Hemel only missing a year.
And I know they've been a bit quiet, but there are rumours, aren't there? They're not far off launching this thing, are they?
New York,
no, Ottawa.
Ottawa, yeah. I would think both will do something in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I'm led to believe. Mm. New York entering the cup, they're going to enter from round one, so they're saying
and play home games.
Yeah, they're looking at. They're not going to play at Red Bull,
so they don't see this as a bump in the road. This is all part of.
Yeah, they do because they wanted to play in League One next year.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see who they get playing for them, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it would give them the chance to play some Americans.
Why? I think a bigger question.
I don't think they'll play many Americans.
Well, they might in that first
here's
year.
Here's a question for you. A lot of this is to do with the player pool, isn't it? Mm. If New York turned around and said we're going to play a load of Americans from America, Samoa, or wherever,
then it'd make no difference. No? You know what you're going to ask? Because the problem is what the AFL are also arguing is that it's too much pressure to put on clubs that are near enough amateur clubs to have two away overseas trips in a year as well. The question that needs asking is, I think New York have been a little bit hard done by, because if Ottawa would have got their house in order in time...
They've been punished for someone else's shortcomings, haven't they?
I think New York have been...
And New York sound like they've got a lot of stuff in ready to go. I think I said it in the piece as well. They're looking at trying to get in the 1895 Cup as well. They want to play some trial games throughout the course of the year. So they're looking at having a good 12-13 games throughout the course of the year, which isn't a full season by any stretch, but it gives you enough to take to the people in New York and take to your partners and your sponsors and say, this is what we're actually all about.
Additionally, I hope that Perez sticks by what he said, that it was going to be done organically and it was going to be a Canadian-based team and all this, in terms of play.
He said it would be different to Toronto.
He said he wanted to do it different to Toronto in that he wanted to develop the Canadian game, which is fantastic. I hope he follows through.
Well, what you could have is three clubs potentially in League One, or four, all doing it organically. With their local bases, Red Star Belgrade,
Valencia.
Well, West Wales.
As well as that.
And Coventry, I think, and Ottawa.
The noises from New York as well were that if they were going to get funding, they were going to spend it on paying for like two or three development officers.
Right.
And getting them.
Yeah, because they're big on the amateur game, aren't they, in America?
Yeah. So they're going to do that.
Just to cover off Valencia, Rochdale Hornets, the friendlies.
Yeah, good. Good. No, I don't think so. It's a good idea. You know, I said it a few weeks ago in League Express, they wanted to get some bye week games.
Just before we go, Toronto to host Australia as well is in talks.
It's one of a number of alternatives for the Australians, isn't it? We've talked about playing Jamaica as well.
Yeah.
You know, I would have thought heading over to Canada and then coming over here might be a bit a step too far for the Aussies, but you never know.
It'll be interesting to see whether. I hope it goes through. St. Helens and Wigan want that game with the Aussies as well. So they've got some stern competition, but the NRL want Australia to play Toronto.
And I know England played New Zealand in Denver, but playing an international match of that calibre in Toronto seems to be a bit more joined up thinking.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, that's any other business. So thank you for that chat there around Championship in League One. Just to cover things off with regards to the World Cup more generally, £14,000 grant successfully applied for by South Yorkshire side Bentley. And for what this means for the club, on Wednesday afternoon, I caught up with their club president. Here's Pete Wayner.
It's massive, to be honest with you, Ben. It's something that, as a club, we've never benefited from anything other than sort of fundraising that we've done in-house. And more often than not, that can be, you're talking sort of small figures, you know, it's like raffles, putting certain nights on, race nights, that type of thing. So £14,000 to us as a club is huge. It really is. It can't be understated how big that is for us. So, yeah, it's really good.
I mean, all these grant applications are about, you know, leaving a legacy from the World Cup and that. This is certainly going to leave a legacy, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've tried to spread it out as well with what we tried to do. So we're looking at the here and now with some of the equipment we needed just for training purposes. We bag shields. We've got new posts coming. If you've seen our posts, it does help the kickers out because they're splayed at the top. So they'll have to get their eye in. But we've looked at the here and now with regards to the equipment. We've looked at ground maintenance, which is grass cutters, line markers, which don't come cheap. We look after the fields ourselves, so it's important we have the right equipment. That'll be massive in itself. And then even longer term, over and above that, we've got plans in place where we're hoping to develop our facilities more. So we've got some of the funding going towards that as well. So yeah, we've tried to look sort of short, medium and long term as far as that's concerned.
No, brilliant stuff. And, you know, these grant applications don't get handed out willy-nilly. So it is a compliment to Bentley and the great work that it's already doing.
Yeah, I just agree. It was a bit of as I said before, we've never sort of had the benefit of having the funding. So when we actually went for the funding, it was all new to us. It was really new to us. So we didn't really know what to expect. We probably went with it thinking, you know what, if we get it, absolutely great. But if not, we'll just carry on as we normally do. So, yeah, it was massive. And I think it was nice to get the recognition and for the Legacy Fund and the RFL and the World Cup and everything that goes with it to really sort of see what we are trying to achieve, because it is something we're proud of. So, yeah, it was a bit of recognition coming back to us as well. And fully appreciated.
Now, let's talk about the club more generally, because, you know, it's there in South Yorkshire. It's a lot of people forget it. It's an old school frontier of rugby league in a lot of ways. So give us an indication of the size of the club and the quality work that it's already doing.
Yeah, absolutely. We've come a long way in the last sort of 5-6 years. So the club it's been around for about 60 years now. We sort of say it a little bit tongue-in-cheek now, but people would view Bentley as being a bit of a pub side. Historically, we've just been one open-age team. We've bounced around from different homes, working out of pubs or working men's clubs. And up until, sort of, as I say, the last sort of 5-6 years, the lads who have been involved with it, we're all getting older now. Some of the boys are having kids, and they've put the commitment on the line by setting up junior sides. So we now boast 7 junior sides, right up from under-6s to under-15s. We don't hit every age group, but we're not a million miles off. Most of them are covered off. We've got 2 other teams on the junior section coming through now. We've got the reception ages and the tots, so we start them really young. They might be training for 2 years before they get up and running. So that's been unbelievable. And in addition to that, though, we've also not taken our eye off the ball with as far as the sort of adults team and the open age and the first team's concerned. They're seeing some unbelievable success, and they are the most successful side we've ever had. We're winning Yorkshire Men's Premier Leagues, we're winning playoff finals, we've had a fantastic run in the Challenge Cup this year, getting to the third round for the first time in our history. So yeah, there's a buzz about the place. And again, if you look even beyond that, we're now also running a second team. This will be the second, maybe even third year we've had a second team out. So participation's gone from a typical sort of 18 to 22 man open age squad to we've now got over 150 people, not just the kids but the adults as well, signed up. And then when you start extrapolating that up even further, taking into account your volunteers and your coaches and the supporters, there's a lot of real good work coming on and a lot of real good buying. So yeah, it's something that we're immensely proud of.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And you know, when we throw everything together, then when we talk about, you know, the developments the club's already made, the new equipment that's going to be on the way, to say the future's bright would be an understatement at Bentley.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think we've sort of, to be honest, we're probably punching above our weight in many respects, which might surprise a lot of people. I don't think it surprises the people who are involved in the club. But yeah, it is. It's we're sort of riding a bit of a crest at the moment, crest of a wave. Success breeds success, as you know. And it's good times at the minute. Long may it continue.
So just finally, Pete, I mean, what is the objective then for Bentley? Because like you say, I mean, this season's already been brilliant because of the Challenge Cup, and you talk about the success in the Yorkshire League and that kind of thing. So, you know, with this conveyor belt that's being developed as well there at the club, I mean, what's the future? Where can Bentley go to?
Well, the aim for the open age is we want to be competing at a high level of the NCL. If you look at where we are and who we've played in the Challenge Cup, we give Lee Miners a game. They knew we'd been there. I think we competed. So from that perspective, we want to be competing at the highest level we can, and the NCL and the higher echelons of the NCL is where we want to be. From the junior point of view, we want to see more kids coming through and wearing the blue and gold of the first team, to be honest with you. We want these kids who we're bringing through and we're coaching, we want them playing for our club. That'd be great, but there's probably a bit of a bigger objective there, that we'd love to see these kids coming through and maybe getting a few professional contracts. We've got one lad already who's got an apprenticeship with Wakefield, so again, the club's immensely proud of that. He gets some good support from us, and he's still involved, he still comes down. So yeah, we want to just develop, we want to develop ourselves obviously first and foremost. If we do that, rugby league develops, and we want these kids coming through, and we really want to sort of protect our future for the next 60 years. And sort of better facilities and our own facilities would be where we'd be looking to go to make sure we're protecting ourselves there and securing our future. And there are plans afoot to go and get those facilities. Just changing at the minute, we're playing out of containers, which we've refurbished. They do the job, but we need to be thinking bigger than that, and we are thinking bigger than that.
Pete Wayne, their club president at Bentley, and at Bentley ARL FC for more information on that great club. That's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. Just before we go, what's going on in your world, Matthew? Before
back, chat's back next week.
There we go. New venue?
I'm a bit giddy tonight.
Oh my goodness.
I am interviewing an absolute goat, Jonathan Thurston. Cannot wait.
That's on Free Sports Tuesday?
Thursday. Thursday next week. Sean Wayne's on.
Right, excellent. There we go. Aaron, where are you off to?
Just all the games.
All the games. All the games. All the games. Yeah. Don't spread yourself too thin.
Not got a hull, though, are you? The one game I wanted Aaron at so he could give me a lift is not going to.
There we go. Martin, League Express out on Monday.
Absolutely, yeah.
Loads of stuff.
We might even have an article by Aaron in it. So
wow.
We'll see. But no, a new feature. With a bit of luck.
Well, that's it for this week's Total Rugby League show. A big thank you to Martin Sadler for joining us. Aaron Barrow, always a pleasure. And Matthew Shaw. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.